My name is Dr. Adrian Reinhardt, and I'm the last surviving member of the Kronos Project team under the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. You've never heard about me or the project, because for all intents and purposes, we do not exist. But I'll be damned if NASA is going to let my colleagues' deaths be for nothing more than a classified folder collecting dust on a shelf. I know you probably won't believe me. I wouldn't if I were you. But if I'm not asking you to believe me, I'm just asking you to listen. The Kronos Project was secretly established in 1988 by NASA and headed by the Department of Defense. The goal was to use deep-range satellites and telescopes to search the far regions of space for signs of life beyond our solar system. What we found was something far worse. In 2004, a signal was detected from the Boötes Void, which is a vast span of nothingness in space, nearly a billion light-years in diameter. And when I say there is nothing, I really mean nothing. The void contains absolutely no matter or even dark matter. It's essentially a definitive null zone in the universe, devoid of anything, all except for a single, continuous signal. I remember it like it was yesterday. My colleagues and I were sitting in a room that can best be described as a discount version of the Mission Control Facility in Houston. We were all there at our desks, going over sheets of useless data from other reconnaissance scans until the detection alarm started to go off, signifying that a signal had been detected from deep space. When we started going over the data, we triangulated the signal source to RA 14 hour 50 minutes 0 seconds, DEC plus 46 degrees 00. For those not versed in stellar coordinates, it pointed smack dab in the middle of the void. Given the vast empty region of space, we at first had thought it was a system malfunction. But when we restarted it, it began immediately reporting a signal coming from those coordinates once again. We had originally thought we were just picking up fragments of a supernova or stellar burst of a long-dead star that had once been in that section of space. But that hypothesis was quickly uprooted when we were able to filter through the background data and convert it into an audio format. It wasn't one long wave of static that you would normally detect from such cosmic events. It was a continuation rhythmic series of beeps that sounded eerily like a heartbeat. Now, of course, we were miles away from actually confirming or denying that this signal was the work of some advanced alien civilization hiding away in the empty regions of space, but we were still absolutely ecstatic over the finding. I don't remember seeing a single one of the faces in there not smiling from ear to ear while that beating, pulsing signal repeated itself over and over again through the speakers of the control center. Following our little eureka moment, we followed the proper procedure and contacted our administrators and awaited further instructions as we aimed every satellite and listening device we had at our disposal at those coordinates. I remember feeling like a kid on Christmas Eve as I was driving home that night, so impossibly eager to see what the next day would bring. Unfortunately, the days would roll into months, then into years, until the next chapter of the ongoing cosmic heartbeat signal would present itself. On August 24, 2009, we were given the go-ahead by the Obama administration to send a reply signal to the same region of the void that the signal was still coming from. Although this was done as a ceremonial milestone, given the fact that the region of space was nearly 700 million light-years away, it would be at least 1,400 million years for a reply to our message to even reach us. Given that the message was still a continuous repetition of 2 beats per second, we decided to use a similar frequency, using a Morse code translation of hello. We popped some champagne and enjoyed the event, as much as one could in a top-secret research facility under a shadow section of the United States government. That night, around 3 a.m, I received a call from Dr. Westcott concerning the signal. I'll never forget how disappointed and yet terrified his voice was over the phone. "The signal," he said. "It just stopped." For years, that seemed to be the end of our little interstellar communications. But we still carried on with our research, always keeping at least one monitoring device locked on the target coordinates of the void. We had a few detected bursts of information that piqued our interest at the time from other regions of space, but nothing like the heartbeat signal. I wish I could tell you that's where the story ends. I wish I could say that rather than typing this out as the last few hours of my life ticked away, that I was back in the facility searching the stars. But these are the wishful thoughts of a man at the end of his rope. It's at this time I've come to the realization that there are no happy endings. 8 months ago, going through a routine series of scans, we received another transmission from the Bootis Void. One I'm still trying to come to terms with. Not because it began again, but because it defied the very laws of physics. This was the message, translated in Morse code. Goodbye. It was a reply to the message we sent nearly 11 years ago. Somehow, a communication that should have transpired over the course of 1,400 million years took place in just 11. It didn't make any sense. It still doesn't. None of what was happening made any logical sense as soon as the transmission was received and translated. The empty space around the center of the void began to expand as the surrounding star systems seemed to just blink out of existence, one by one, like a series of bulbs being turned off. The stars began to go out. It was almost as if we were watching it occur in real time, which is another astronomical impossibility. You see, we can only observe as fast as light travels, which means if you were watching the Bootis Void that is 700 million light years away, we would be seeing it as it was 700 million years ago. But now, we were watching an event unfold that was absolutely cosmically impossible. The rate at which the stars were vanishing was expanding the void at a rate of nearly 5 million light years a minute. I don't know how to describe it, other than saying that the dark nothingness was growing faster than the speed of light itself, seemingly consuming and extinguishing everything in its path. All the while, that message just kept ringing throughout the room. I don't know how or why, but very quickly, the implications of this flooded over the control center as my colleagues and I began to realize the gravity of this impossible event. There was no argument amongst us whether this was possible or not. It clearly wasn't, yet it was happening all the same. At this rate, it'll reach the solar system in just under a year. Dr. Waterford sounded weak and hoarse as he exclaimed the obvious. We were all thinking the same thing. In a little under 360 days, this cosmic expanse would reach our very own star system. We, of course, didn't know what would happen when it did. But in astronomy, you always think of the worst. If the sun was somehow extinguished by the void, as all the surrounding stars were, it would take a little under a year for the Earth to become an uninhabitable wasteland. That was, of course, even if the planet wasn't completely consumed and absorbed into nothingness as well. The entire time I ran the calculations and possible scenarios in my head, the message we received kept popping up again and again, seemingly trying to answer the question as to what was going on. Goodbye. It seemed to hit Dr. Redmond first as he leapt to his feet and made for a dashing sprint to the exit. Soon, everyone began to follow. Under normal circumstances, you'd think that the man's cheese had finally slid off his metaphorical crackers. But given the current situation, given what we were witnessing, he may have been the most sensible one in that entire room. Then, just as a few others were making their way towards the exit, it suddenly dawned on me as well. The message. It must have been telling us and everything else in its path. Goodbye. Whatever was in the Bootis Void was coming for us, coming for everything. At the time, we really weren't thinking of the consequences of our actions. We weren't focused on the repercussions of suddenly jumping ship and going AWOL from a top-secret government program. The only thing racing in our mind was the sweeping wall of nothingness hurtling towards us faster than the speed of light. I went straight home and drowned myself in a bottle, hoping to wake up the next morning to realize everything was just some crazy dream. I wouldn't be so lucky, of course. In truth, I would come to find that out very quickly. That night, at about 1 a.m, I was awoken by the phone. When I went to check the unknown caller, it turned out to be one of my colleagues, Dr. Maverick Burcham, who was one of the last men to even leave the facility that day. "You've got to run, Adrian," he yelled, trying to catch his breath. I had wondered, at the time, what had caused him such physical exertion. "What are you talking about?" I asked, as my head pounded with a throbbing migraine. "They're scrubbing the project, cleaning house. Don't you know what that means?" That first sentence was all I needed to sober up. If what he said was true, then word had gotten up the chain of command, and they had now come to knowledge about both the discovery and its implications, as well as the science team's reaction to said implications. If they were scrubbing the project, then we would be the first to be cleaned up. "How do you know about this?" I asked him. "I tried to go over to Maguire's house to discuss possible outcomes about the expansion, but when I got there, his house was burning to ashes. And Cuthbert and Lethbridge won't answer their phones, and on top of all of that, I think I'm being followed." "Are you sure?" I asked, as I made my way to the bedroom window, searching for any government hitmen. "Yes, absolutely. I've driven around my block twice now, and I'm on 58 South. There's been a black unmarked car following me the entire way." I could almost make out what was Sniffles through the speaker. "Listen, you've got to get the hell out of Dodge right now while you've still got the chance. If you're half as smart as I know you are, then you'll..." Those were the last words I heard from him before the signal gave out. I didn't need much more of a warning after that. I quickly got some things together and piled up into my Avalon and hit the highway. I've been on the run ever since then, dodging any sign of suspicion by moving state to state, county to county. All until now. Once I post this, they'll obviously be able to trace it, and I'm going to let them. I've been running all year, and I'm tired of it. Mainly because there doesn't seem to be a point to it any longer. Within a few months, the expanse will reach us anyway. So forgive me if I take the easy way out of this. I wish I could tell you in these final words that the governments of the world are working together to somehow try to stop this. But they know better. They know it's coming. And rather than be upfront with you, they want to hide it as long as possible. That's why there's been so much mess clogging the news and media here lately. They want total blanket coverage of so much chaos here on Earth. That way, no one looks up to see the inevitable. It's coming, and there's no stopping it. So, do me a favor, will you? Make what little life you have left worth it. Hold your loved ones. Go on that vacation you kept putting off. Do what makes you happy. Live. Goodbye.